Uncle?
Ah, Wormwood.
You summoned me.
I did. Do sit down.
Where?
On that spike.
Right, I believe I'll stand.
Suit yourself. My dear Wormwood, the amateurish suggestions in your last report warn me that it's high time for us to talk about the painful subject of prayer.
Prayer? But I did as you said, Uncle, and found that your advice about my patient's prayers for his mother proved, well, singularly unfortunate.
That is not the sort of thing that a nephew should say to his uncle, nor a junior tempter to the under-secretary of a department. It also reveals an unpleasant desire to shift responsibility. You must learn to pay for your own blunders.
I am at a loss.
Indeed. The best thing, where it is possible, is to keep the patient from the serious intention of praying altogether. When the patient is an adult, recently reconverted to the enemy's party, like your man, this is best done by encouraging him to remember, or to think he remembers, the parrot-like nature of his prayers in childhood. In reaction against that, he may be persuaded to aim at something entirely spontaneous, inward, informal and irregular. And what this will actually mean to a beginner will be an effort to produce in himself a vaguely devotional mood in which real concentration of will and intelligence have no part. This is the sort of prayer that we want, where the patient attempts to conjure a feeling of love and supplication. And since it bears a superficial resemblance to the prayer of silence, as practiced by those who are very far advanced in the enemy's service, clever and lazy patients can be taken in by it for quite a long time.
Right.
At the very least, they can be persuaded that the bodily position makes no difference to their prayers. For they constantly forget what you must always remember, that they are animals, and that whatever their bodies do affects their souls. It is really funny how mortals always picture us as putting things into their minds. In reality, our best work is done by keeping things out.
I had no idea.
Look, if this fails, you must fall back on a subtler misdirection of his intention. Whenever they are attending to the enemy himself, we are defeated. But there are ways of preventing them from doing so. The simplest is to turn their gaze away from him towards themselves. Keep them watching their own minds and trying to produce feelings by the action of their own wills. When they meant to ask him for charity, let them instead start trying to manufacture charitable feelings for themselves, and not notice that this is what they are doing. And when they meant to pray for courage, let them be trying to feel brave. And when they say they are praying for forgiveness, let them be trying to feel forgiven. Teach them to estimate the value of each prayer by their success in producing the desired feeling, and never let them suspect how much success or failure of that kind depends on whether they are well or ill, fresh or tired at the moment.
But working with the patient while he prays is risky, isn't it? The enemy is there.
This is a fact. Wherever there is prayer, there is danger of the enemy's own immediate action. He is cynically indifferent to the dignity of his position and ours as pure spirits. To those human animals on their knees, he pours out self-knowledge in a quite shameless fashion, but even if he defeats your first attempt at misdirection, we have an advantage. The humans do not start from an immediate perception of him which we unhappily cannot avoid, for they have never known that ghastly luminosity, that stabbing, that searing glare which brings a permanent pain to the background of our lives. If you look into your patient's mind when he is praying, you will not find any of that.
Then what is he imagining about the enemy when he prays?
Any number of ridiculous ideas. There will be images derived from pictures of the enemy as he appeared during the discreditable episode known as the Incarnation. There will be vaguer, perhaps quite savage and puerile images associated with the other two persons. There will even be some of his own ideas made up out of his times of reverence, which he has objectified and attributed to an object. I have known cases where what the patient called his god was actually located up and to the left of the corner of the bedroom ceiling, or inside his own head, or in a crucifix on the wall. But whatever the nature of the object, you must keep him praying to it, to the thing that he has made, not to the person who has made him. Otherwise, well, our situation will become rather desperate.
Desperate, Uncle?
Yes, yes. Once all his false images and objects have been flung aside, and the man trusts himself to the completely real, external, invisible presence there with him in the room, why, then the incalculable may occur.
How do I prevent that from happening?
Well, you are helped by the fact that the humans themselves do not desire it as much as they think they do. There is such a thing as getting more than they bargained for.
Yes.
Oh, do shut up and get out.